Okay, thank you for everybody that came up and read. Are you guys ready to have your minds blown? No pressure, Kath. Okay, at this time I'm going to ask Doug S. to come up and introduce our speaker.
My name's Doug. I'm a grateful recovering addict. So ever since I'm a CD guy, and I like to travel to conventions. You know, I started traveling to conventions with my first year clean and traveled all over the country. And one of my stops at each convention is the CD table, you know, and because I like to be inspired, man. And so and everywhere I went on the CD table, there was always a CD of this lady named Kathy H. And I would notice it, and I'd glance by it, and after several conventions and seeing her repeatedly on the speaker table, I thought, I'm gonna find out what the hubbub is, you know? So I purchased the CD, and I played it, and Kathy's one of these people that that explains recovery in a way that makes me want to be the best version of myself. Okay, and so, you know, I put that CD in, and she'd spit out some words of wisdom, and I'd say, wait, I missed something, and I'd hit rewind on the CD, and hit play, and hit rewind. You know, it took me like 4 hours to listen to a 1 hour CD, because I kept backing up and listening, you know. And so I met her about a year ago at a convention, you know, and I told her, I said, hey, what are you doing in April, you know? And she looked at her calendar and she didn't have anything. I said, well, we haven't talked about it yet in the convention committee, but just put a hold on April 1st and 2nd and March 31st. And sure enough, the committee decided, I submitted her CD, and they decided to have her up here. And I'm going to tell you something. Kathy came in on Wednesday, and we hung out, and we went to a local meeting, you know, and took her to eat the best barbecue she's ever had, you know, a little old place in Tulsa. And so I've spent the whole weekend with Kathy, you know, and like I ran over a street cone, and she didn't even panic, you know. She all she did was yell, cone, and, you know, but I went ahead and ran over it anyway. I told her, I think cones are like resentments, you know. I run over one every chance I get, you know. And so her safe word now when we're driving is cone. So anyway, just to cut it short, man, I have had an amazing time with Kathy, man, and being able to hang out with her and listen to her, man, and just the God in me met the God in her, and we were instantly meshed, you know, and now I consider her a great friend. And without any further ado, Kathy H.
Hi everyone, I'm an addict named Kathy. Wow, this got pumped up, didn't it? I used to not invite my mother. I used to play basketball in grade school and high school. And I used to I used to swim too. I used to dive and swim. And I would never invite my mother because the expectations were too much and they would make me very nervous. And so I would ask her not to come. And so, as this weekend has been happening, like, you know, and, you know, I know I'm loved. That's one thing I know, I'm loved. And I want to thank this committee. I can't even in words thank you enough. And not just the committee, you know, mad props to you guys for the work that you've done. But the whole fellowship in this region for being, like, so embracing and loving and caring. Because look, I travel a lot. That doesn't happen all the time. So seriously, the fact that you do what you do naturally is just very comforting. It's very comforting to me. So I want to applaud you and thank you for embracing me and being just who you are. Like, I'm grateful for who you are. And that's something huge to be able to say to another addict. That, you know what I mean? I say a lot of times to sponsees when they're going through relationship stuff, and they'll be like, he this and she that and all this other stuff, and I'll be like, okay, so if they never change, if this is who they are, just the way they are right now, are you in it for the long haul? Can you be in it for the long haul? And that was one of the things that, you know, it's that whole acceptance thing that goes with, instead of like, I was always waiting to be happy. It just seemed like, you know, something that, you know, if this happens, I'll be happy. If I can get this dream to come true, I'll be happy. If I accomplish this, I'll be happy. Like, I was waiting for it all the time. And learned through Narcotics Anonymous that being happy is seizing a moment. That being happy is living in the now rather than waiting for something else to happen. And being able to seize moment and make memories is so awesome. I'm sorry, I apologize. It's so awesome because the living in the moment is very difficult for us. It's very difficult for us to grab hold of a moment. So my whole thing is seize moments, make memories. I go to conventions and I'm taking pictures with people because I always say I'm going to see some old friends and I'm coming to make some new ones.
Yeah.
Right? This is the way I'm trying to live my life. It isn't just at a convention. It's wherever I go. It's whatever's happening for me. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about this is Experience, Strength, and Hope. For anybody that's new, that's how we share. We share about how it was, what happened, and how it is today. And that's how Experience and Strength and Hope goes. That's how we inspire each other. That's how we get identification, and that's how we get inspiration. That's the way I've learned to live, you know, in recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. So my clean date's 12/7/88. But I didn't come here in 88, I came in 86. And I came in 86 as a nudge from a judge. I had just finished doing a 4-year sentence in the penitentiary. I always say for not knowing how to sell drugs. Like seriously, it was a bunch of addicts that were just running doctors and scripts and using. And they made a federal, now you know you say they made a federal case, they make a federal case out of it. They made a federal case out of it. We all had public defenders, we all went to jail. It was just, you know, that's the way it goes. It's just they made it that. I used to take pride in that. I was in the car, we were playing in the car and somebody was talking about jail and I'm like, no, excuse me, I did federal time. Yeah, it really wasn't that big of a deal. It really wasn't. But I came, after doing a 4-year sentence, I came into a halfway house. And I actually wanted them to send me back to the penitentiary. Because I get accustomed to living a certain kind of way. Change is hard, even if it's good. Change is hard, right? And so I only had 3 months left on my max. And so they had a whole bunch of rules that I didn't want to, like, I'm like, fuck that, send me back to the penitentiary. I'll do the last 9. You can't give me more time than the judge gave me. Send me back, I'll do my 90 back there. No, you have to reintegrate. Like, what? Like, you know what I mean? It's like rehabilitate. Like, what? Like, first I'd have to actually have been integrated to reintegrate. I would first have to be habilitated in order to be rehabilitated. Like, I would first have to know how to live before I could be reintroduced to living. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous did for me. It introduced me on how to live. I never really had structure. I never really, like, where's the, you know, I knew laws, but I didn't know, like, do you have a blueprint on how to live? Because I just seem to have missed that class or something. You know what I mean? And so one of their things was you had to go to 12-step meetings. Like, oh, my God. So you had to go to 12-step meetings, you had to get the note signed. And the only way to get out of the house was to acquire certain points to get out of the house, so I had to go to 12-step. I went to every 12-step meeting. If I was trying to address symptoms, I would qualify for probably a dozen 12-step meetings. And there are some yets that I probably, you know, will address too, but I'd be running everywhere trying to, like Brandon was talking about on Friday night, whack-a-mole. You know what I mean? Okay, let's whack the food. Okay, let's whack the spending, the shopping. Okay, let's stop the gambling. Okay, let's, you know, stop the vicious relationship cycles. Okay, like I'm whacking constantly, constantly. And so I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I knew you were my people as soon as I came. Like, I knew it. There's just something about, you know how you can go anywhere, anywhere in the world, and we know us. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you just see somebody in shopping or you see somebody on the street and they'll be like, that's my people right there. Like I know my people. Yeah. And I knew you were my people, but I thought you lost your hustle. I thought it was really sad. It was very sad that you fucking quitters. Damn, like, you know what I mean? Like, come on, man up, you know what I mean? Woman up, don't give up, you know what I mean? Because I really believe that an addict had to do it till they died. Like, you had to go to the, you know what I mean? We ran till the wheels fell off of it, we ran. And so I thought that it was pathetic. I thought it was really sad you were in church basements hanging out and stuff, like, look what you've become. You know what I mean? Like, it was just really sad to me. It really was. And I thought you were way too serious. Like, you're just getting, you know, okay, so I know the drugs are a problem. I get it. But now you're going to separate, like you're going to say alcohol goes in there? Like alcohol's a refreshment. You're fucked up. Like, come on, man. That's not right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because, like, really, like, what do you do when life shows up and it gets real hard and you need to take the edge off? Like, what do? Like, come on, you can have a drink then, right? Like, when something really terrible happens and it's just so impacting, like my shoestring breaks or something. You know what I mean? Like, what do you do then, you know? So I argued alcohol was a refreshment. We used to say back then, if you ain't praying, you ain't staying. I don't hear that much anymore. There was a bunch of shit we used to say that we don't say anymore. We used to say, feelings aren't fact. I had a sponsor that used to say, they may not be fact, but they're like hallucinations. They appear very real at the time, right? And then we used to say, what hurts your feelings might save your life. We used to say that a lot, right? Because people say, like, you hurt my feelings. All right, that might save your life, you know. That might save your life. Just think about it. Might save your life kind of thing. But we didn't put so much emphasis on feelings as we do today. You know, where my feelings are valid, you know. Yes, they are. Without a doubt, but they're yours. That's for sure. Yeah. So they used to say, if you ain't praying, you ain't staying. And I'd be like, oh, have mercy. Now they're going to, like, do the religion thing on me. They're going to pull me into some kind of cult. I was talking to somebody over the weekend about sponsorship groups that follow certain rigid regimens. And I was like, sounds like a cult. We were laughing, though, because it works for them. You know what I mean? And I'm very good with, I've learned through diversity is our strength. I'm very good at that now. I used to be very judgmental and very critical. Is it time to go? No. I used to be very judgmental and very critical about the way people did their recovery and the way, you know, certain things that they, you know, adhered to. And then I got the topic during the pandemic, diversity is our strength. It's never coincidences. Like, you know what I'm saying? You get exactly what you need in here. If you just show up and don't be scared. don't be afraid. Just, like, you know, face it, you know. So I did diversity as our strength. And I tend to have when I get a topic, I talk to God. I try to do, like, a meditation thing. Okay, what am I supposed to learn now, you know? What do you want me to know now? You know, I understood diversity being, you know, regardless of age, race, you know what I mean? No matter what you used, who your connections were, I get it. Okay, diversity, I get it. But I don't understand how it's our strength. Why is it, like, emphasized that it's our strength? And so I'm talking to God. This is how stuff happens to me. I know it sounds like schizophrenic, but it's really not. They're thoughts that kind of come to me, just thoughts. Meditation to me is nothing more than sort of a pondering, a contemplation, a thought that comes. I ask for help, and something comes in my head that says, here, I can help you. So I'm asking, he says, at 2 o'clock in the morning, this shit, I don't sleep well. I still don't sleep well. I've never slept well. That was the first thing I prayed for, was sleep. I got like 3 hours of sleep when I prayed, and I was like, this shit works! This works! And so I hear, go get the book. Go get the book. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Are you kidding me? No, go get the book. And I know the book to be the basic text. So I go get the basic text. It's the book, the text, right? And I open it up, and I'm like, what? What now? What? And as I'm thumbing through it, it does sound so crazy, but it's so true. Sometimes when I'm thumbing through, do you ever have where there's a certain stuff just kind of gets bold that isn't bold? Like it just starts to, it wants you to read this. I want you to read this kind of thing. And all of a sudden I start seeing many of us, most of us, some of us, few of us. I'm like, oh, holy shit, that's diversity. The whole book is diversity. The whole thing. So now I'm looking and it says, some of us think this disease was present long before we started using drugs. Oh, okay, now I'm a some. I'm a some. Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know, now I'm a most. Right? Many of us have said, take my will in my life, guide me. I'm not a many. I'm back to a some. Because I don't do structured prayer. I do structured prayer with you, but I don't do it when I talk to God. Right? So I don't have to be. I can be a many, a most, a some, or a few, but the beautiful thing is, regardless of what I am, what group I'm in, I'm still part of the we. Regardless of whatever group I'm in. I'm still any addict. Right? I'm still any addict. Anonymity is my favorite principle because it gives God all the credit. No names, no personalities. It's God. It's God. I'll say it all the time. Who's in charge? I'll be walking around the house when the personality's getting in my way. Right? And I'm starting to get a resentment. Who's in charge? Hey, who's in charge? Who's in charge? Second tradition, favorite tradition. Ultimate authority's in charge. I don't care what these people think they're doing. In the end, God's going to make sure it works out. I'm going to trust that, because if I start looking at personalities, I will get into the triangle with the quickness. With the quickness, I'll get into the grip. So it was very helpful to me, because now whenever someone's like, you know, saying something and we disagree, I don't have to make my point anymore. Now I don't have to argue who's right or wrong anymore. Now I don't even have to judge anymore, because, you know, okay, there are some, I'm a many. Okay, I'm a few, there are most. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is, we're all in it together. I'm just in a different little subgroup. I'm in a different committee. And it's so cool because I'm still part of the whole. And so it's very comforting to see how the principles work in my favor and for the good of all. When we talk about goodwill, when we talk about the symbol, for the good of all. Now I'm with you instead of against you. And so when I came in and I had all the problems with the other one, was don't get into a relationship for a year. I've been with women for 4 fucking years. Are you kidding me? Not that I can't make women work, but I'm really not, that's not the way I roll, you know? I used to have a friend of mine, he used to say, there's no such thing as bisexual, they're just greedy. Yeah. So, and I said, there has to be like exceptions to some of these rules that you're throwing out like this, you know. But I didn't stay because I looked for all the differences. That's what that is. That's what, you know, when we say look for the similarities, not the differences, that's what the differences sound like. Because it's closed-mindedness to anything that's being offered to me. And that's why I say look for a way to connect, not disconnect. Look for a way to be a part of, not apart from. This is a disease of alienation and separation. Recovery is about connection, inclusiveness. That's the kind of stuff that we look for in order to not feel so alone. When they say NA is never alone, never again, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about no matter what happens, no matter where I go, no matter what's going on, I am never alone, never again. And the comfort that comes with that, the sense of safety and some sense of well-being, that I'm covered, that somebody's got me. That's why we hug. That's why we hug. We hug because we embrace each other. We embrace each other to let each other know, I got you. I got you. You're not alone. You don't ever have to go through anything in your life ever again alone. Right? It goes totally against. It goes totally against self-sufficiency. Everything that disease has, the recovery has something, a principle to combat that, to defend us from letting the grip get on us. I used to think that the grip would always get on me. Like I lived most of my recovery, decades of my recovery, working to get out of the grip of the disease. Oh, it's got me again. Oh, it's got me. Not real. I never knew. I never knew that spiritual principles actually will help me not let the grip get on me. Like I always thought that I was always trying to get out because it had that kind of power over me. I didn't realize for a very long time that I can actually practice principles enough that I can see it coming. Right? That my spirit can be like, even just the thought. Like I'm talking seven step stuff, just the thought of doing something that is ill-willed disturbs me, disturbs my spirit. That doesn't mean I don't do it, I'm just saying. Yeah, it's seriously, but at least, you know, it's a development of a conscience that's taking place here. We were talking about that at breakfast. Let your conscience be your guide. How does that happen? Because how did I even lose it? Well, I lost it because during my active addiction, my conscience would come up. Every time I made a move to say, don't do this, please. You know what I mean? I'm talking about the never lines where I said, okay, you know, I'm going to do this, but if I think of doing this, I'm done. I'm going to stop. If I ever, like, you know, have to give up my child, I'll stop, right? Mother would have to stop if she's giving up her child. If I ever think of turning a trick, oh, I'm fucking stopping right there. I'm going to stop. Right. I remember one of mine was, if I ever have to shoot dope in my neck, oh, that would be a definite, you'd have to stop. That's disgusting. You'd have to stop. But all the never lines come. And in that moment, I'm faced with, are you going to get the next one by any means necessary? Or are you going to stay true to your own morals and values, whatever's left of you? Whatever I haven't compromised already. Right? I'm slipping into darkness. I'm slipping into darkness. This is before the drugs. This is a belief system that starts to take place way before the drugs. It's attached to an attitude of indifference or intolerance to spiritual principles, right? We'd say there's one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. What? One thing more than anything else that'll defeat me in my recovery. It's an attitude. An attitude. What's an attitude? It's the way I think and what I believe about someone or something. of spiritual principles, right? I lived decades in recovery selectively practicing principles. Selectively. Sometimes randomly. Sometimes on occasion. Whenever it seemed easy. And then there was other times where, you know, required me to dig deep. I had to go hard. I had to get that extra effort in. And I would be like, fuck this. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go low, right? I didn't realize I was connecting with the disease. Like, I didn't look. So anyways, I didn't stay in 86. I crawled back to the rooms in 88. Crawled back. Completely infested with infection. Abscesses all over me. They took me to the county jail in Pittsburgh, Allegheny County Jail. And the jail wouldn't accept me. Now look. You know, it says you have a moment of clarity when you come like face to face with your disease or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, when I hit the jail and the guard says, no, I can't take her, I'm like, you're the jail. Like, the jail takes everybody. Like, what do you mean you can't take me? Like, and I remember hearing, like, the whisper of a conscience, because by then my conscience was pretty dulled. You know when he says we come in here spiritually bankrupt? You know, there's just barely anything left of us. It's the conscience that's barely there anymore. But I heard a whisper say, this is really bad, you know that this is really bad, right? This is bad. If the jail won't take you, you're really bad. And they wound up taking me to a hospital because I was so infested with infection. She said, we can't care for her. And I saw myself on TV. Ramrods come through my door regular. I'm very fortunate that I get arrested. Because if we talk about jails, institutions, dereliction, and death, which is what it says, the reading just is nice. Dereliction is my biggest fear. Like, you know, I got clean because living to use and using to live, I didn't see any end in that. Like, what if that's how I have to keep living forever? Who knows how long? Like, there's no end to it. Well, even wanting to die isn't an end. You know, it's, no, we're going to keep going. You're going to keep going. You're going to keep, like, you know, degrading yourself. Keep humiliating yourself. Keep living in despair and emptiness and loneliness. Self-loathing. Go in there. Do it. Do it. Until there's barely anything left of me. And so I saw myself on TV, ramrod through the door. I was like, ooh, somebody got busted in my neighborhood. And I'm watching the TV and I come out of the house. That's some fucked up shit, like really. When you know what I mean? When you're thinking you're going to be watching somebody else and it's you. And I know my mother's got, she's watching the news, so I know now my mother knows. Now the whole neighborhood knows. My mother can't even come out of her house. She's in such shame. And I, in that hospital bed, I had my first step experience where I cried out. And my best prayer has been the same prayer for 34 years. Because Doug said, did you pray? And I said, yeah, it's the same prayer. God, please help me. Please help. I don't know what needs to happen, but I need help. I can't live like this anymore. I can't. I've had enough. I can't do it anymore. I was 32 years old. I was going to be 33 in a month. My dad had 5 bonds on me at the time. One of them was a 10,000 straight. I remember him standing in the kitchen. I live in the house he was raised in. And holding them up, and he said, look at this, I got 5 bonds on you. I'm talking about having no, you know, a genuine concern for others. Like even any compassion, any sort of, even empathy, even, you know, just self-awareness. None of it's there. All that was there is he said, look at all these, I said, what's your problem? You'll get your money back. What are you, I'm going to show up. You know what I mean? What the fuck are you complaining about? Like, what's your problem? You know, I remember when I got sentenced to go to jail, my mother was in the back of the courtroom with my daughter, and they gave me a 4-year sentence with a 4-year special parole. And my mother gasped. Oh my God. And I turned around, I was like, what the fuck? I'm doing the time. What the fuck is your problem? I'm talking about just insensitive to any impact on anybody else in my life. The people that loved me dearly, that, you know what I mean, that desperately were trying to help me, that couldn't help me. And when I came back to Narcotics Anonymous, I sat in the back of the room. I had bandages all over me. I used to keep my hands in my pockets. Even up till May, I'd wear gloves if I could. And I was too sick. I was too sick to raise my arms up to even comb my hair. So it just, I didn't even care. You know, I just need help. I don't care what I look like. I just need help. And I sat in the back near the door so I could exit quickly because I was afraid that you'd come up to me and try to hug me. And if you did, you could smell that smell of coming off of those abscesses. And there's a Skinner song that says, ooh, that smell, can't you smell that smell? It's the smell of death. It surrounds us. And I knew I smelled like that. And you cannot make a circle. You still can't make a circle. So you make kidneys, livers. Like, I don't know what those shapes are. But I used to stay close to the door, but because you can't make a circle, you do the shift, you know, where you got to tighten everything up. And I got away from the door. And I, you know, I used to try to get out of there. The readings were the comforting thing for me. Why Are We Here is my favorite reading. Even my favorite chapter in the basic text. It's almost like it tells my story. But I got shifted in between doors. And as I was in the circle, I lifted my head up so I didn't fall because I needed to know where I was going. And a woman made eye contact with me. Oh my God, it was like the police were on me. Like, serious, it was. Oh my God, she saw me. Oh my God, now what? Oh, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to get out of here? And she came after me when the circle broke, and I knew she was coming. I was like, oh, fuck, she's coming. And she came and she held me. She didn't hug me. She actually held me. She didn't, like, squeeze me. She just held me. Look, I knew why I didn't want a hug. I knew I had swallowed so many years of so many tears. And I'm not even just talking about active addiction. I'm talking about my childhood. I'm talking about my teenage years. Then I'm talking about active addiction. I'm talking about just swallowing where I was ready to cry, and then that voice would say, don't you dare. Don't you dare. You better, you know, woman up and get yourself together, take a breath and do what you got to do. Don't you dare. I didn't know that was self-rejection. I didn't know that I was, you know, moving away from any possibility of self-acceptance. I didn't know that that was happening to me. Every time I denied myself of what was going on with me, every time I pretended to be somebody hard and I wasn't, I didn't know that I was rejecting myself. I had no idea that that was going on. And she whispered in my ear, you don't have to live like that anymore. And I was just astounded, and something happened. My stomach flipped. I got this rush. I got a rush. I was like I took a hit or something. You know what I'm saying? It was like you get the goosebumps and stuff, and the hair comes up on the arms, and I said, what'd she just do to me? What just happened, right? I thought, on, maybe I'm gay or something. I don't know what's going on. Like, what just happened? What just happened to me, right? Because I'm serious, because I didn't know. Look, she gave me hope. She gave me, I didn't know what hope felt like. I stopped hoping a long time ago, way before the drugs. I told myself as a little girl, don't hope and you won't get disappointed. Stop hoping. Hoping's the problem. I told myself, there's so many principles that I told myself they weren't working for me, and I substituted them with defects. I thought I was protecting myself. I really was trying to take care of myself. I didn't know that I was slowly destroying myself. I was slowly committing spiritual suicide. I was slipping into a darkness where the drugs only helped me maintain that position. That position already happened before I started the drugs. That's why the drugs became so attractive to me. I couldn't maintain the shutdown. Yeah. My third step was really hard for me. That was a second step hit for me. My third step was really hard because I didn't have a good relationship with God, and I really didn't want to mess with God. I figured I had burned God so many times with the jackpot prayers that I really didn't want. Like, it was almost like, it's like if you burn somebody and then you know you got to go back to them later on to cop. You know they're going to burn you. You know what I mean? I just know you're going to get burned, right? And so, and I believed that about God. I came from a very religious background. There was a lot of repenting going on in my background. Not just repenting for actions, repenting for thoughts. They called them impure thoughts. Now I got an active addiction going on, and now I got to deal with, I'm always thinking fucked up. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's always thoughts. I scare myself with my thoughts. I had a friend of mine call me the one day. She said, well, what you up to today? I said, girl, I'm doing the best not to scare myself. That's all I'm trying to do today is not scare myself. Because I'll do that plenty of times during the day, and I'll be like, oh, there you go, you did it again. Don't scare yourself, honey. That's okay. You're all right. I have to tell myself, calm down. It's okay. It's okay. You're all right. I got to do this regularly, regulate myself. This is self-support. This is seventh tradition, no lie, self-support. How do I talk to myself? Who am I listening to? I had a woman one time, she was talking about the 11th step, but she was talking about, she called her sponsor up, she was having trouble making a decision, go figure, right? Oh no, a decision! You gotta make a decision, she said, so I don't know what to do, what's right to do? Should I persevere, or should I surrender, right? Which one should I do? I don't know which one's the right, and I'm getting, things are being going, this sounds right, I don't know. So she calls her sponsor and says, how do you know if it's the disease or if it's God? How do you know which one's talking to you? And she says, when you called me on the phone and I picked up the phone, how'd you know it was me? She said, I know it's you. I call you all the time. We have conversations all the time. I know what your voice sounds like. I know. She said, well, maybe if you talk to God more, you'd know God's voice too. And that's what the third step is asking me to do, is to build a relationship and start talking to God. Start listening. So I remember I used to ride around and I'd be talking to God. I don't know if I'm doing this right. I'm not sure I'm getting this right. But I don't want to use. And you know what I mean? I don't want to live like that. And look, if the drugs don't kill you, the lifestyle will. It's not about drugs. It's not just like a blanket thing of like drugs. The lifestyle of the drugs. If the drugs don't kill me, the belief system that goes with living to use and using to live will kill me. if the drugs don't kill me, the lifestyle will. It's a whole belief system that's attached to living like that. That's some stuff that requires a lot of serious six-step work to really get into not just what I do, but why I do what I do. And what I had a guy one time say to me in a meeting, if what you believe doesn't make a difference in your life, it doesn't make a difference what you believe. I said, what the fuck did he just say? What? He said, if what you believe, because here's the beautiful thing, we can believe whatever we want to believe in here. Nobody's going to say what's wrong, what I believe. So yeah, you can believe whatever you want to believe. But if it's not improving the quality of my life, then it doesn't make a difference what I believe. It isn't helping me. And so I have to really take a look at paying attention to what are you like believing? Because I used to say it all the time. Somebody would say, I don't believe that. You know, I think when Chris was saying fake it till you make it, I used to hate that too, right? I used to hate it. I'm not faking anything, I'm real now, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? I'm not pretending anymore, but it's really meant as blind faith. It's really meant to be like, go step out there on blind faith. But, you know, just even though you're not sure, even though there's like hesitance, even though there's some fear, take a risk. Like I was doing a principles workbook, and one of the principles that came up was uncertainty. And I was looking at it, I said, this is a typo, right? It's certainty is the spiritual principle, right? No, uncertainty is the spiritual principle. I'm like, that doesn't make sense, because uncertainty has doubt in it, and doubt is what the disease uses to get in on me. And I said, so how does that work? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. So early in recovery, I used to go to my sponsor all the time. It was in my sponsor's back pocket. I was the only person I felt safe with. It was the only person I really trusted. And I trusted her like my life depended on it. Like, seriously, whatever she said, even if I didn't like it, would hurt your feelings, might save your life. What hurts your feelings might save your life. That's an ego hit. Because a lot of times people say, I feel like, that's a thought, not a feeling.
Right.
Like, know what a feeling is before you're feeling. You know what I mean? But if I'm taking a hit, you just offended me. Well, did I offend your ego? Because if that's the case, good job on my part. Right. You know what I'm saying? Good job on my part, because your ego's not serving you well. Your ego's trying to trap, my ego traps me in the triangle. It's an invitation to the triangle. I didn't even realize that my first step, look, fuck. There's too much happening here. So my first step, like I did step work over and over. I'll do the work. My sponsor will be like, oh, like you're done again? Like, no, because I'll do the work. I've done the steps, I've done the traditions, I've done the concepts, I've done living clean. I've done, you know what I mean? Like, I'll do the work. And I realized I did, you know, answer the questions. Answer the questions. Check, 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 check. Answer the questions. But what do I get out of it? How do I apply it to how I live, right? Which means I have to get principles from it in order for me to really apply something to change the way I live. Not just answer the question. There has to be some fundamental transformation that takes place in me. Who I am changes. What I believe changes. It's asking me to believe in surrender. Asking me to believe in acceptance. Asking me to believe in humility. Asking me, you know what I'm saying? It's asking me to believe in honesty. It's asking me, like, you know, I remember people saying, be honest. I'd be like, you want me to tell on myself? What, are you serious? I don't tell on myself. Because I didn't believe telling on myself served me well. Because I believed too many things. I believed if I told you about me, that you would collect information and use it against me. Oh, that belief system will burn me. It'll burn me, so because I'll keep secrets then. Like, I'll withhold. So I don't know, that's part of self-rejection. I didn't know self-acceptance. Acceptance says to find rest in, to make peace with. So acceptance wants to make peace with the pain. I'm responsible to make peace with my pain. I can't blame my mother anymore because she didn't say I loved you, or my dad because he left, or the second grade teacher bitch that, that made me sit at the door and the principal's office was right there and I hyperventilated only because I was talking too much in class because I was lonely. But I can't blame her. Every one of these things were trying to tell me something. Look, they're trying to help me make peace with my pieces. There's so many pieces that need, they don't come up like, it's moving too fast in here. I had a sponsee doing, where was I before that? Do you remember?
First step,
thank you. So I did all this step work, and I went through the steps, and the first step I focused on powerlessness and unmanageability. The second step, insanity. Third step, self-will stuff, right? Fourth step, endless loops, useless patterns. Fifth step, exact nature. Sixth step, defects. Seventh step, shortcomings. Eighth step, harm. Eighth step, harm. Ninth step, damage done, right? Tenth step, the wrong. And I realized after decades now, mind you, that I was focusing on the problem. I was doing tons of step work focusing on the problem. I had a very good understanding of the problem. Not the solution. Right? Just delving into more of the problem. And then living there. Like emotional volatility, that inward unmanageability, where I'm connected to my brokenness, where that's what defines who I am. Everything that's messed up about me, everywhere I fall short, all that stuff, that was defining who I was. Instead of practicing the principles and focusing, why is surrender so hard for me? Why do I get dragged so much? Well, first off, I have a warped perception of what surrender is. Surrender, when I came in, meant assume the position. You know, when I'm signing, like, assume the position and somebody else is going to take over your life now. Somebody else is going to take over your life. Well, we're not having that. So I'm not going to surrender. Because who's going to be in charge of that now? No. I'm not doing that. And it wasn't until I did like a principle sort of focus working, and then I got a new understanding of surrender that it says deliberately letting go of my attachment to a specific outcome. What? Now I know why it's so hard for me to let go. Because plenty of times I thought I let go and I paused. I hit the pause button. It wasn't a let go, it was a pause. It was a pause to regroup to get another idea. Right? I wasn't let go. It wasn't let go. And so I realized now, okay, so what's the problem? The problem is I'm trying to get some outcome to happen. And I'm attached to the outcome. Well, third step says, guess what? We're now, your job is effort. You put forth an effort. God's job is the outcome. God's the outcome. So now surrender has a whole other meaning. Now I know my place. Now I know I put forth the effort. If it starts getting really like ugly, where I'm seeming like I'm really trying to force an outcome, I'm not just putting forth an effort to do good, then I know I'm not in surrender anymore. Now I know I'm in control. Like, I didn't know how it worked. Like, I have to know how principles work. When I hit my fourth step, my sponsor said, you need to put all your pieces on the table. Like, when I was a little girl, I used to hide in the closet looking for something, helping. Will somebody look for me? Anybody even notice I'm gone? Will somebody call my name even? And every time no one did that, I left pieces of me in the closet. I went in there many times. Many pieces of me are in the closet. A teenager, I got very rebellious. My mother told me one time, grabbed me by my shoulder. She said, I was very sensitive. I cried a lot. And she said, you better learn how to fight or they're going to eat you up alive out there. Like, I literally thought people were going to eat me and shit. You know, like zombie shit or something. You know what I mean? And so I started fighting. So my whole teenage years are nothing but fighting. That didn't stop as I got older. I thought it worked because people would fear me because they knew I'd fight. So they wouldn't mess with me. They wouldn't talk much about me because then I was getting respect. I got it twisted. That's respect. No, that's fear. And what it does is it isolates and separates me. It makes me end up being alone, but I think I'm being respected. I'm all twisted in here. It's all a mess in here. Even being a woman and sitting in the bathroom, I could find a woman in the bathroom on the floor. I spent, you know what I mean, years and years in the bathroom. And pieces of her are in there, wanting to die, not wanting to live anymore. Being so desperate. You know, I was in a relationship with my husband who used. So my first year clean, I got married and I got pregnant with twins the next month and he used. And here's the funny thing. So I'm pregnant with twins, he uses, and it takes me back to when I was 16 and got married and I got pregnant. No, I got pregnant and I got married. Say it how it is, right? So I got pregnant and I got married, and then 6 months into the pregnancy, I find out he's an addict. I'm talking about broken dreams. So here, this also connects to I'm with my family, my mom and my dad, and my dad leaves. And it's broken. It's broken. It's broken. It's broken. This one can't be broken. Like, I think that I can somehow make something in the present fix something in the past. Like, if I can get the happily ever after, if I can get the kids and the husband and the family, if we can just be together and be, you know, loving and caring, then it'll take all that other pain away. But it doesn't, because I'm not owning the pain, I'm avoiding it. They're my pieces. Bring all the pieces. Because we're going to make peace with the pieces. And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that self-acceptance was making peace with myself. I didn't even know I was at war with myself. I knew something was wrong. It was because I literally... I decided that resentments were a good idea. I didn't know what they were. But at a very young age, I said... I remember being little saying, when I get big, I'm going to make you pay. That's a resentment. But I didn't know what it sounded like. So I'm doing, you know what I'm saying? I have to know what this stuff sounds like. And so I literally started keeping track of everybody that hurt my feelings. Everybody that did anything to me, I was keeping track. And I was keeping it on file because I'm going to make you pay. At some point, the opportunity is going to present itself. And you're going to pay big time. And I would make them pay, but the pain wouldn't go away. So now I feel like shit for making them pay. Now there's guilt and shame attached to that because I'm harming others to make them pay for something that I won't even face. Look. I remember telling myself, little, if you don't care, it won't hurt. Don't care and it won't hurt. The shutdown, don't care and it won't hurt. I remember talking to Chris about this on the phone because he's like, I'm in acceptance. And I was like, are you sure it's not apathy? And he's like, what? What? Yeah, are you sure it's not apathy? Whenever the relationship breaks down and it's so painful we can't take it and say, well, just don't care and it won't hurt. I didn't know I was falling into apathy. I had no idea that I was in self-rejection like the IP of self-acceptance says. Like, I didn't have any idea that was happening to me. The whole thing is the perfectionism, the people-pleasing, the caretaking, the ongoing self-rejection that keeps taking place over and over and over again, denying myself of being, like, truly okay with myself. Hmm. When I was early in recovery, I couldn't sleep well. And so I used to meditate at night. Meditation is something that happened very early in recovery. Talking to God, meditating, talking to God, right? Please help me, I can't sleep, the thoughts won't stop. This is back when the TVs used to shut off and you'd get the buzz screen, when we only had landlines. Yeah, remember them? Yeah. And nothing was there but the clock ticking. The darkness and the clock ticking, like time was standing still. And the thoughts just kept coming in my head, tormenting me, scaring me. You know, telling me, you're never going to get this. You're worthless. You're a piece of shit. You're never going to be enough. You're a failure. All the stuff starts coming. It won't stop. It has no mercy. No mercy. And I remember saying, God, you got to help me. Please help me. And I made a poem up. Like, his poem came up, it was called Just for Tonight. And it said, just for tonight, I'll be all right. In the quiet dark of the evening, my thoughts will not deceive me. I have faith in God above. I believe he's full of love. I have a ship to weather the storm. With help from all, I will transform. So hold on tight and don't lose sight. And just for tonight, I'll be all right. And I used to say it over and over and over again. But the cool thing I noticed was when I said the poem over and over and over again, like I wouldn't stop, I just kept saying it over and over, that those thoughts that were persecuting me couldn't get in. Like they can't get in. Like I have some kind of power with stopping them from getting in. And I started to realize that if I read the literature and I pay attention to the literature, becomes my new belief system. And so I start believing in what the literature is saying, the program, the first 10 chapters, not the experience, strength, and hope part, the stories. I'm talking about the program part. That stuff starts to become, so long as I follow this way, I have nothing to fear. Like, I start living the program. Like, I'm living it like my life depends on it. My thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Right? Oh, faith in someone who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Right? I'm not going to be alone. You can't twist me into thinking I'm alone. All the program, I'll try to follow it to the best of my ability. I'm really going to give it like all I got. Be all in. Just like you were all in over here, be all in. Just for today through NA, this is one. I will try to get a better perspective on my life. My sponsees call me all the time. I had one sponsee that used to call me, and she would be calling about this one did this, and that one did that, and this is some bullshit. That ain't fair, which is probably my biggest red flag for my sixth step. As soon as I think something isn't fair, I go into vigilante mode. I got to be very mindful not to let that happen, because I think that I'm like supposed to make it fair. Instead of trusting God. I have to be very careful with that one. And so she'll give her spin on it, and then I'll give my spin on it, and then she'll say, why are you never on my side? Why are you, like, you know, because she was having trouble at work, you know, and I'd be like, well, if they're picking at you and it's pointing out what you're not doing right, then just do it right. Like, it doesn't, like, just do it right. They won't pick at you. You know what I'm saying? Like, shift. They're targeting me. No, you're being told, like, you know, is this ego or is this feelings? Are you sure? You know what I mean? So she said, well, you know, why do you never be on my side? And I said, honey, I'm the over here by myself. I'm on your side. I'm all over here by myself. Like, I'm the one for you here. I'm trying to help you be for you. Can you be more purposeful rather than take things personal? Can I be more for me instead of against me? Like, I have a choice. I'm free choice. And that's what I started to realize with the steps. Now, if step one saying you got free choice. Right? Free choice. Second steps tell me you can. There's hope here. The definition, like, the coolest thing is surrender says deliberately letting go of my attachment to a specific outcome. So I got to stop, even with impending doom, stop going there. Now stop with the outcomes. You don't know what the fuck's going to happen, okay? Stop it. That's uncertainty. You don't know what's going to happen. I used to ask my sponsor all these questions, and she'd say, Kathy, I'm telling you, you got to stop living. You got to start living in the questions. I'm like, what? She said, because every time I answer your question, you're going to have another question. Just live in the questions. What if you don't know? What if I wake up and say thank you? Was that high or was that 10?
That was 10.
Okay. So what if you just I wake up in the morning and I say, I don't know what's going to happen, and I'm just excited to see what goes on here. I'm excited to see how God's going to guide me. What's going to happen for me? How I'm going to grow. How I'm going to be able to shift. How I'm not going to do what I always did. I'm going to do something different. Look at me growing. I'm excited about that kind of stuff. I'm excited to, I'll see, like when I was in early recovery, I'd be beating myself up, and I'd hear a song or something on the radio, and it'd be like, don't let the past remind you of what you are not now. I'd be like, oh, that was God talking to me. That was God, right? Or I'd be beating myself up, I'm not getting anywhere, I'm not doing anything, I'm barely hanging on. And I'd see a billboard that would say, you've come a long way, baby. Yeah. Right? It was a cigarette. it was a cigarette thing. But it didn't matter. It was the message, not the messenger. It's the message. It's always the message. It's always, if I'm centered enough to get the message, to see the message, to be the message. To be the message. Hope says, now that you don't have outcomes attached, can you possibly believe in a favorable outcome? Now that you're not attached to impending doom, now you're not trying to control outcomes, now you're letting it go, can you just lean into the possibility of believing in a favorable outcome? That's why two comes after one. That's why when it talks about there's a vacuum, you better move to two quick. Get the principles. It's the principles that inspire us. It's the principles. I'm trying to move out of the triangle into the move out of the triangle into the square. The square of the symbol. God, self is the 12 steps. Society is the 12 traditions, right? Service is the 12 concepts. God is my personal relationship with the God of my understanding. All based on doing the right things for the right reasons. Because I want to be of purpose. Because I value what's been given to me. Because I want to inspire others, right? I do swimming. I swim. And so I got fluid in my inner ear, and I couldn't swim because I was getting dizzy. So you have to shift. Don't be like, oh, I can't swim anymore. Look, I had so much pain. I had a job. I'm a nurse. Figure that out, okay? I'm a nurse with all my felony convictions. Didn't get them pardoned or expunged. They gave me a license, right? Thanks, God. And so I was having trouble with sciatic pain. And I was going through all this stuff, getting these injections. I was going to physical therapy. I was doing acupuncture. I was doing everything I could possibly do. And I was having a conversation with God. Please, God, I can't live like this in pain like this. This is suffering. This isn't a quality of life I want to live. I can't, you know what I mean? I'm not sure I want to keep doing this like this. You know what I mean? There's times where I've had that, where in recovery, reality of life, it gets very difficult to endure. And sometimes endurance is very hard to maintain. And sometimes I'm not sure I have enough of it to get to the other side of it. So I'm talking to God, and all of a sudden, I said, I tried all this stuff. I'm doing all this stuff. It's not working. He said, I hear in my head, well, why don't you lose weight and exercise? I was like, what? Why don't you lose weight and exercise? I said, well, did you just call me lazy and fat? But it dawned on me that I still look outside myself for solutions rather than within. I'm the solution, right? I'm the solution. And so I lost like 60, I lost 70, but I'm inching back up. I lost 60 pounds and I started swimming. I don't like exercising, I don't like sweating, and I don't like other people's sweat either, and I don't like smelling sweat. I hate gyms. They're like nursing homes to me. They smell like nurse, like they just, it's sweaty shit, you know what I mean? So I said that to Gar, I know I don't like exercising, you know I can't walk, my sciatic acts up, I can't, you know, what I can't do, and I had a thought that was so loving, it was so bizarre, that said, remember when you used to like to swim? I forgot. As a little girl, I liked to swim. Like it was just, how did you remember that when I don't even remember that? And I started swimming. So now I do this aerobics thing because I can't do the laps. But that means my head's up and people talk to me all the time. And I'm trying to do my thing, you know what I mean? And so I'm like, I could, you know what I mean? But I believe I'm purposeful, so I have to interact. Because I don't know who I'm supposed to serve, and I don't know who's serving me, but I got to keep interacting because that's the way it works, right? And so this woman comes over, she's 77 years old, her name's Patty. And she says that she's trying to learn how to swim at 77. She said, but I'm having a terrible time with my breathing, and I'm having a terrible time like trying to, I said, okay, experience, strength, and hope. I'm telling you what, experience, strength, and hope works everywhere. No advice, no preaching, no lecturing, no telling anybody what to do. There's no you need to, you should, no. There's experience, here's what I do. I do it with my kids, I do it with my mother, I do it everywhere I go. And so it serves me well. And so I say my experience, strength, and hope, I take two and then I take a breath. Take two, blow it out, come up, take the breath, I'm telling her. I tell her, I am one with the water. Patty, be one with the water. So she starts swimming. I want to do my thing. I'm not trying to be Pat with Patty. I want to do my thing. I got a mission here. I'm trying to take care of myself. Well, Patty's trying and she's having trouble. So now I got to coach Patty. All right, I got to coach her. Now I'm yelling, go, Patty, go, 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 you got it, go, go. Don't stop, because she would stop and grab the wall. No, go, don't give up, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle, Patty. So Patty comes back, she gets ready to get out, and she says, I want to thank you, because you inspired me to want to go all the way to be better. And that's what this whole thing is about, no matter where I go, no matter what happens. I'm just going to close with a poem that a grand sponsor of mine used to share. It's called Building Bridges. It says, an old man traveling a lone highway came in the evening, cold and gray, to a valley that was deep and wide, through which was flowing this rippling tide. I love you. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. That rippling stream held no fear for him. And he turned when he reached the other side to build a bridge to span the tide. Old man caught a cynical voice from there. You're wasting your time building here. Your journey's over. It's the end of the day. Why build a bridge to span the way? The man raised up his old gray head. Good friend, this road I've traveled, he said. There followeth after me today some newcomers whose feet must pass this way. And this road, which was so very difficult for me, for those newcomers may a pitfall be. They too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building this bridge for them.